coven of witches attempting a casting out on an inmate. She nibbled her muffin as she considered. And to be honest, I don't think it would work, not the way it did with Harding last winter. Harding was a pawn, unaware and largely unwilling. Remington isn't unwilling, and my sense is that he knows. He not only accepts, but revels in what comes into him. He welcomes it. I could get in to see him. Nell waited for Mia to look back at her. He would agree to that. I might be able to reach him. You couldn't. Mia reached out to squeeze Nell's hand. You're part of his catalyst. More important, Zack would have my head, and rightly so, if I encouraged you to try. Another face-to-face encounter between you and Remington is too dangerous under any circumstances, but it might be harmful for the baby. I wouldn't try to... Nell's eyes went wide. How did you know about the baby? I took a home pregnancy test at dawn. She pressed a hand to her belly. I'm going to the doctor this afternoon to back it up. I haven't even told Zack. I wanted to be sure first. Be sure. I felt it when I took your hand. Joy swam into Mia's heart, over her face. New life. Oh, Nell. I knew the night when I conceived. I knew. I felt a light inside.
Tears spilled over.
I was afraid to believe it, to get my hopes up. We're having a baby.
She pressed her hands to her cheeks, spun in a circle.
We're having a baby. I have to tell Zack.
Go, tell him now, right now. We can handle things here until you get back, can't we, Lou? Lou?
Mia turned, saw Lulu digging a tissue out of her pocket.
Got allergies,
Lulu announced in a strangled voice.
Go on.
She waved a hand at Nell.
Go tell your man he's going to be a daddy.
A daddy?
Nell danced around the counter, threw her arms around Lulu's neck, then around Mia's.
Oh, I can't wait to see his face. Oh, and Ripley's. I won't be long. I'll be back.
She raced for the stairs, then spun around with her face glowing.
I'm having a baby.
You'd think no one ever managed to get knocked up before.
After a last sniff, Lulu stuffed the tissue back in her pocket.
Guess I'll have to knit some booties. A blanket.
She shrugged.
Somebody has to step in and play grandma.
Mia slid her arm around Lulu's waist, rested her cheek on the older woman's hair.
Let's sit down a minute and have a good cry.
Yeah.
Lulu dragged the tissue back out.
Good idea.
Nothing, Mia was determined, was going to smear this window of joy. Not a 300-year curse, not the inconvenience and confusion brought on by the early stages of expansion, and most certainly not her own prickles of envy. Whatever had to be done, Nell would have these thrilling days of happiness and discovery. Because of the hammering and the blocked view from what had been the cafe windows, the lunch crowd had dwindled down to the adventurous ones and the diehards. To Mia's way of thinking, the timing couldn't have been better. The smaller crowds allowed Nell a few more hours off a week and the luxury of being distracted. By the solstice, the bulk of the job would be done, and if the cafe wasn't yet picture-perfect, her customers would be able to dine al fresco on her new little terrace. From the sidewalk outside the bookstore, Mia measured the progress. The cantilevered overhang would, when all was said and done, blend well with the rest of her building. She intended to hang baskets of flowers from either end. She'd already ordered the curving ironwork for the banister and had selected the slate for the terrace floor. She could visualize it completed, decked with cafe tables, pots of summer flowers, and paying customers.
Coming right along.
Zack stopped beside her.
Better than I could have hoped. We'll try it out during solstice week and be 100% by the July 4th holiday.
She let out a deep, satisfied breath.
How are you, Sheriff Daddy?
Couldn't be better. It's been the best year of my life.
You'll be a good father.
I'm going to work hard to be.
You will,
she agreed.
But the core of it will just be there. Do you remember when we were kids and I used to come to your house?
Sure. If you weren't there with Rip, she was up at your place.
I always loved coming there, watching your family. Sometimes I'd pretend they were mine.
She leaned into him when he stroked her hair.
Just wondering what it would be like to have that kind of focus, I suppose, from my parents. that interest and amusement and pride, all those things that were so much a part of your house.
I guess they were.
Oh, Zack, sometimes I'd see your mother look over at you or Ripley and just grin. I could hear her thinking, just look at those kids, aren't they great? And they're mine. Your parents didn't just tend you, didn't just love you. They enjoyed you.
We were lucky. We enjoyed them right back.
I know. Lulu gave me that, so much of that. So did my grandmother when she was alive. So I understood what it was. And because I did, my parents' innate disinterest in me was such a puzzle. In some ways it still is.
Well,
because he thought she needed it, he pressed a kiss to her hair.
There were times growing up when I'd think you were lucky because you could get away with more than I could. You just had Lou running herd on you, and I had two people.
She did the work of two people,
Mia said dryly.
Two sneaky people. She would always let me run right to the end of the tether. Then, when I thought I'd get away with it, she'd yank me right back.
She's still running herd on you.
Don't I know it? Anyway, to circle back to where we were before this ramble turned around to be about me, I wanted to say, you're going to be a terrific father. You come by it naturally.
There's nothing I won't do to protect Nell and the baby. I need to ask you straight out if anything the three of you plan to do can hurt the baby.
No. She framed his face with her hands. No, I promise you. And I'll give you my word, my vow, that I'll protect her child, your child, as I would my own.
Okay, then. Now I'm going to ask you one more thing. You trust me.
Zack, I already do.
No.
He curled his fingers around her wrist, surprising her with a sudden intensity.
You trust me to do my job, and that job is to protect the people on my island. You trust me to care about you, to stand for you the same way I would my sister. You trust me to help you when it comes time to finish this. You trust me enough for that.
For all of that, she told him, and more. I love you.
Sam stepped onto the curb in time to hear her say it, and hearing it, he felt a twinge in his gut. Not in jealousy, he knew better, but in envy that another man could draw such absolute trust and warmth from her, that another man could hear that quiet and heartfelt declaration even as a friend. It took all his willpower to work up a sneer.
Greedy son of a bitch!
Sam punched Zack lightly on the shoulder.
Haven't you already got a woman?
Seems I do.
Still, Zack leaned down, kissed Mia on the mouth.
In fact, I think I'll go on up and see what she's up to. Nice kissing you, Miss Devlin.
Nice kissing you, Sheriff Todd.
Looks like I have to do better than nice.
To work off some of the frustration, Sam spun her around, caught her up, and gave her a long, sizzling kiss that had a trio of women across the street breaking out in applause.
Well,
Mia caught her breath and tried to uncurl her toes.
I suppose that was a few levels above nice, but then you always were competitive.
Take an hour off with me, and I'll show you some competition.
That's such an interesting offer, but...
She put a hand on his chest and eased back.
We're just a little pressed with the remodeling. I've already used up my break kissing the sheriff.
Why don't you serve me lunch? I thought I'd scope out your menu.
Your patronage is appreciated. The violet and herb salad is getting raves today.
She walked to the door and opened it.
I'm not eating flowers.
I'm sure Nell has something suitably manly to offer you, like a raw, meaty bone.
Bones for you.
Lulu called out as Mia started up the stairs.
I'll take it in my office.
She glanced back at Sam.
You know the way to the cafe.
He did indeed. He settled on the Cajun chicken sandwich and an iced coffee and watched the workmen. It had been to his benefit as much as Mia's for him to spring the crew for a few weeks. His season was underway and the guest rooms already rehabbed were fully occupied. After the fourth, he intended to put the workers on half-days so as not to disturb his guests during the early morning or early evening hours. That would take them into September, and by September, he thought, he'd know what to do with the rest of his life. She wasn't letting him get any closer. She welcomed him into her bed, but wouldn't sleep in his. She would talk about work, about the island, about magic, but she'd made it clear that an entire decade of their lives was off limits. Once or twice, he'd tried to bring up his time in New York, but she'd simply closed down or walked away. Though they were both aware that everyone on the island knew they were lovers, she wouldn't go out with him. She hadn't had dinner with him in public since that first business meeting. His suggestions that they take an evening on the mainland and have dinner or go to the theater had been brushed away. The underlying message came through clear enough. She was telling him she would sleep with him, enjoy him, but they weren't a couple. Brooding over his sandwich, he wondered how many men would celebrate finding themselves in his position. He had an extraordinarily beautiful woman who was willing to share sex with him and expected, indeed permitted, little else. No strings, no expectations, no promises. And he wanted more. That, he admitted, had been the root of the problem from the beginning. He'd wanted more, but he'd been too young, too stupid, too stubborn to see that the more was all Mia. When she sat down across from him, he found his heart was in his throat and ready to spill out.
Mia.
I got Caroline Trump.
She snatched his iced coffee, drank deep. I just got off the phone with her publicist. I have her for the second Saturday in July. You should have heard how cool and professional I was on the phone. She'd never have guessed I was turning cartwheels.
In that dress?
Ha ha. Sam, she reached over to take his hands. I know your influence is largely responsible for this. I'm grateful. I want you to know how much I appreciate you putting in a good word for the store.
That part was easy. Now don't screw up.
I won't. I already designed the ad in anticipation. I have to talk to Nell about food.
She started to spring up, then hesitated. So, do you have any plans for the solstice? He met her gaze, kept his voice as casual as hers, though they both knew she was offering to take another step, one that was, for her, a big one.
No, no formal plans.
You do now.
12. Mia closed and locked the door behind the last straggle of customers, then leaned back against it and looked at Lulu.
Long day.
I thought that last group was going to make camp in here.
Lulu shut down the cash register for the night, then zipped the cash bag.
You want to take this moolah home, or should I make a night deposit?
How much, moolah?
Because they both enjoyed it, Lulu unzipped the bag, pulled out the stack of bills, and flipped her thumb over the ends.
Lots of cash customers today.
God bless them, everyone. I'll do the deposit. Credit card receipts?
Right here.
Rolling her shoulders, Mia crossed over, scanned the stack.
Business is good.
Solstice week sucks 'em right in. I had two teenagers in here today, summer girls. Wanted to know if they could see the witch and get some love potion.
Amused, Mia leaned on the counter.
And what did you tell them?
I told them, sure, and how well the beauty potion worked for me. That sent 'em scurrying.
Well, they have to learn not to look for life cures in a pretty bottle of potion.
You put out some fancy jars full of colored water during solstice week, and customers would trip over themselves to buy them. Mia's magic mix for love, beauty, and prosperity.
Terrifying thought.
Mia angled her head.
In all these years, Lou, you've never once asked me for a spell or a charm, for luck, love, fast money. Why is that?
I get on well enough on my own.
Lulu hauled her enormous purse from behind the counter.
Besides, don't think I don't know you look out for me anyway. Better start looking out for yourself.
What an odd thing to say. I always look out for myself.
Sure, you've got your house and you live well. Live the way you see fit to live. You've got your looks and you're healthy. Got more shoes than a Vegas chorus line.
Shoes separate us from the lower mammals.
Yeah, yeah. You just like having men look at your legs.
Mia trailed a hand through her hair.
Well, naturally.
Anyway,
Lulu focused in. She knew her girl, and she knew when that girl was trying to distract her.
You run things pretty much as you want to. Got good friends,
And you've made this place into something you can be proud of.
We made it,
Mia corrected. Well, I didn't sit on my hands, but this is your place.
Lulu gave a decisive nod that took in the entire store.
And it shines.
Lou.
Touched, Mia brushed Lulu's arm as she came around the counter.
It means a lot to me that you'd think that, say that.
It's fact. And there's another fact, one that worries me some nights. You're not happy.
Of course I am.
No, you're not. And worse, you don't think you're ever going to be. Not deep down in the gut happy. You want to give me a spell. You fix that. That's all I have to say. Now I'm going to go put my feet up and watch my video of Die Hard. I like seeing Bruce Willis kick ass.
With no comeback, Mia simply stood there while Lulu strode through the store and out the back. Unsettled now, she took the cash and receipts and wandered through the store. It did shine, she thought. She had put a great deal of energy and imagination to use here. Financial resources and intellect, long, hard hours and eclectic taste, and nearly 7 years of her life. It made her happy, she insisted as she walked up the stairs. It challenged and fulfilled her. That was enough. She'd made it be enough. Maybe she had once assumed she would have a different kind of life, a life that included a man who loved her and the children they made together. But that had been a young girl's fantasy, and she had put away such dreams. Just because she didn't have those things didn't mean they were missing, she thought as she went into her office to fill out the deposit slips. It only meant she'd taken another path, ended up at a different destination. In the gut, happy, she mused, and sighed. How many people were when it came right down to it? Wasn't it just as important to be satisfied, fulfilled, and successful? And wasn't it essential to any level of happiness to feel in control of your life? She heard, as clearly as fingernails scraping against glass, the dark pressing against her windows. She looked outside. The sky was still glowing with the light of a summer evening, but the dark was there, just at the edges, trying to find a crack, a chink in her will.
You won't use me to destroy.
She said it clearly, so her voice carried through the empty store.
Whatever else I do in my life, I won't be used. You are not welcome here.
And there, at her desk, with the day's receipts and paperwork neatly stacked, she spread her arms, palms up, and called the light. It shimmered in her hands like gilded pools, then flowed out in golden rivers as it spilled from her, the dark slithered back. Pleased, she gathered what she needed to make the deposits. Before she left the store, she detoured to her new terrace. The door walls had been installed that day, and she unlocked the glass, slid it open, stepped out into the evening. The ironwork railing was exactly as she'd wanted, fussy and female. She laid her hands on it, gave it a quick, testing shake, and was satisfied at its unyielding strength. Beauty, she thought, never had to be weak. From her vantage point, she could see the curve of beach, the roll of the sea, and the first sword of white from her lighthouse as the dusk faded toward night. The dark that crept in now was benign, full of hope. Below her, High Street was still busy. Tourists were out for strolls, wandering into the ice cream parlor for a treat. The air was so clear she could hear bits of conversation and the shouts and squeals of young people on the beach. As the first stars glimmered to life, she felt her throat go tight with a longing that she refused to recognize and couldn't resolve.
If you had a trellis, I'd climb up.
She looked down, and there he was, dark and handsome and just a little dangerous. Was it any wonder the girl she'd been had fallen so pathetically in love with Sam Logan?
Climbing up into business establishments after hours is discouraged on the island.
I've got pull with the local authorities, so I'd risk it. But why don't you come down? Come out and play, Mia. It's a hell of a night.
There had been a time when she would have run to him, because she remembered just how easy it had been for her to forget everything and anything but him. She simply leaned out over the railing.
I have an errand to do, and another long day tomorrow. I'm going by the bank. then home.
How can anyone so beautiful be so stuffy? Hey,
he grabbed the arm of one of three men walking by, then pointed up.
Isn't she spectacular? I'm trying to hit on her, but she's not cooperating. Why don't you give the guy a break?
One of the men called to her, only to be elbowed aside by one of his companions.
The hell with him. Give me a break.
He laid a hand dramatically on his heart.
I think I'm in love. Hey, Red.
Hey, yourself.
Let's get married and move to Trinidad.
Where's the ring?
She demanded.
I don't move to Trinidad unless I have a big fat diamond on my finger.
Hey, the man jabbed one of his friends. Lend me $10,000 so I can buy a big fat diamond and move to Trinidad with Red. If I had 10K, I'd move to Trinidad with her. Now see what you've done, Sam chuckled. Destroying friendships, inciting riots. You better come down here and go with me before my new pals and I have to beat the crap out of each other.
Amused, she laughed, stepped back, and shut the doors. He waited for her. When he'd seen her standing on the terrace, he'd been staggered. She'd looked so enchanting and so sad, heartbreaking. He'd have done anything in his power to lift that quiet sorrow, and anything, nearly anything, to reach past that thin shield she kept between them. He wanted to see what was in her mind, in her heart. Maybe the key, at least for one precious evening, was to keep things simple. He stood on the sidewalk when she came out and locked the front door behind her. She wore a slim dress that flowed around her ankles and was scattered with tiny yellow rosebuds. Her shoes were a series of slender crisscrossing straps and a high wedged platform. He found the thin chain of gold around her left ankle ridiculously sexy. She turned, hitched the strap of her bag onto her shoulder, then scanned the sidewalk.
Where did your friends go?
I bribed them with free drinks at the Coven.
He jerked his head toward the hotel.
Ah, replaced by a cold beer.
Want to go to Trinidad?
No.
He took her hand.
Want an ice cream cone?
She shook her head.
I have to go to the bank, make a night deposit, which, I'll point out, isn't being stuffy, but responsible.
Uh-huh. I'll walk with you.
What are you doing in the village?
She asked as they started toward the bank.
Working late?
Not particularly. I went home about an hour ago. I was restless.
He shrugged his shoulders.
Came back.
And, he thought, had timed it exactly as he'd planned, just as she'd be closing. He glanced over, studied a small group of people on the opposite side of the street. They were decked in flowing robes and weighed down with silver chains and crystal pendants.
Amateurs,
he commented.
They're harmless.
We could call up a storm, turn the street into a meadow, give them a real thrill.
Stop it.
She drew out her key for the deposit slot.
See? Stuffy.
He heaved a sigh.
It's painful to see such a bright hope turn into a rule book.
Really?
Efficiently, she made her deposit, tucked her copy of the transaction into her cash bag.
I don't recall you ever so much as looking at a rule book.
When they look like you, I study them in depth.
His moods, she thought, were many and varied. Tonight's seemed to be foolish. She could do with some foolishness. And as the group of would-be witches approached a window box filled with struggling dahlias, she gave a graceful turn of her hand. The flowers sprang up like jewels, full and bright.
And the crowd goes wild.
Sam acknowledged the reaction across the street, the shouts, the gasps.
Nice touch.
Stuffy my butt. I'll take that ice cream now.
He bought her a frothy swirl of orange and cream and talked her into enjoying it during a walk on the beach. The moon was nearly full. It would be fat and round by the weekend and the solstice. And a full moon on the solstice meant bounty and promise and the rites of fertility that lead to harvest.
Last year I went to Ireland for the solstice,
he told her.
There's a small stone dance there in County Cork. It's more intimate than Stonehenge. The sky stays light until nearly 10, and when it begins to fade, toward the end of the longest day, the stones sing.
She said nothing, but paused to look out to sea. Over it, she thought, thousands of miles away, was another island,
and the stone circle where he had been a year ago. She had been here, where she always was, a solitary witch, a solitary celebration.
"You've never gone," he said, "never gone over to Ireland."
"No."
"There's magic there, Mia, deep in the soil, bright in the air."
She continued to walk. "There's magic everywhere."
"I found a cove on the rocky western coast, and a cave nearly hidden by the tumble of the rocks, and I knew it was where he'd gone when he left her here."
He waited until Mia stopped again, turned to him.
3,000 miles across the Atlantic. He'd been pulled back by his own blood. I knew how it felt to be pulled that way.
"Is that why you go to Ireland? You're drawn by your blood?"
"It's why I go there, and why I came back here. When you've done what you need to do, I'd like to take you, to show you."
She licked delicately at her ice cream.
"I don't need to be taken anywhere."
"I'd like to go with you."
"You learn fast, don't you?"
Mia said.
"I may go one day."
She shrugged and wandered closer to the surf.
"We'll see if I want company. I will say, though, you were right about one thing. It's a hell of a night."
She threw back her head, drank in the stars and sea air.
"Take off your dress."
She kept her head back.
"Excuse me?"
"Let's go swimming."
She nipped into the cone.
"I realize it may seem fussy to a sophisticated urbanite like yourself, but there are laws against nude swimming on the public beach in our little world."
"Laws. That would be the same as rules, right?"
He scanned the beach. They weren't alone, but there was hardly a crowd.
"Don't tell me you're shy."
"Circumspect," she corrected.
"Okay, we'll preserve your dignity."
He spread his hands and conjured a bubble around them.
"We see out, but nobody sees in. It's just you and me in here."
Stepping to her, he reached around, slowly lowered the zipper in back of her dress. He could see her thinking, considering, as she finished off the cone.
"A moonlight swim's a nice way to cap off the evening. Haven't forgotten how to swim, have you?"
"Hardly."
She slipped out of her shoes, then let the dress slither down. She wore nothing but amber beads and a glitter of rings. Turning, she strolled into the surf, then dived into the dark sea. She swam strong, cutting cleanly through the breakers and reveling in the sensation of streaking through the water as unencumbered as a mermaid. Until her spirit began to hum with pure joy, she hadn't realized how much she'd needed this: freedom, fun, and foolishness. She circled a buoy, listening to its hollow clang, then rolled over to float lazily on her back under a bejeweled sky. The water lapped gently over her breasts as he swam to her.
"You ever beat Ripley in a swim race?"
"No, much to my regret."
Mia trailed her fingers through the water.
"Putting her in water's like putting a bullet in the air."
"I used to watch the two of you in the inlet over at the Todd's. I'd be hanging out with Zack and pretending not to notice you."
"Really? I never noticed you."
It didn't surprise her to find her head underwater. She'd expected it. And because she had, she turned like an eel in the water and jerked him under by the ankles. She surfaced, slicked back her hair.
"You always were a sucker for that move."
"It got your hands on me, so who's the sucker?"
He treaded water in circles around her, his hair black and glossy as a seal.
"I remember the first time I maneuvered you into wrestling with me wet. You had on this blue number, cut so high up on the hips that I speculated your legs went clean up to your ears. That sexy pentagram birthmark like gold on your thigh, driving me nuts. You were 15.
"I remember the suit. I don't recall being maneuvered."
"You were cooling off with Rip in the water. Zack was fooling around with his boat at the dock. He had just gotten that boat. Fast little 14-footer.
She remembered that well enough. Remembered perfectly how her heart had slammed into her ribs when Sam, long and tanned a summer gold, had sauntered out onto the dock wearing nothing but cutoffs and a teenage smirk.
"There were a number of times I swam with Ripley in the inlet while Zack tinkered with his boat. And you came along."
"This particular day," Sam continued, "I bided my time, fiddling on the boat with Zack,
plotting out my moves. I got him to take a break, and we went in. That meant a lot of splashing, which meant you and Ripley had to bitch about being splashed, and doing so, you fell right into my clever hands.
Like Sam, Mia began to tread and circle. She'd always enjoyed him in these playful moods. They'd been rare in his youth. She imagined they were rare still.
I believe you have delusions of grandeur in your faulty memory.
Memory's clear as a bell on this one. I egged Zack into challenging Rip to a race, which left the two of us bobbing around, which meant, naturally, I could challenge you to a race.
Oh, yes. I do seem to recall something of that sort.
Perfectly. She remembered perfectly. The nervy thrill of floating in the water with him, of having him focus on her with those sea-toned eyes, and the longing that had swept through her like a summer storm.
Of course, I held back, paced myself so it was close, so I beat you by only a stroke.
Held back?
She dipped back her head, studied the stars. Please.
Oh, yeah. I knew what I was doing. You said it was a tie, and I said I'd crushed you. When you got huffy, I dunked you.
When I protested your bad call, you dunked me, she corrected.
You retaliated, as I'd anticipated, by locking your arms around my knees and hauling me under, whereby I could engage you in the sort of battle that allowed me, at last, to get my hands on your excellent young ass. It was a moment for me. Then you giggled.
She made a derisive sound.
I've never giggled in my life.
Oh, yeah, you did. You giggled and squirmed and wriggled around until I was so worked up I thought I'd explode.
She let her feet come up and floated again.
Foolish, foolish boy. When you wrestle naked with a female, she's bound to discover just where your brain cells have gathered.
You were 15. What did you know?
Now she smirked. Enough to wriggle and squirm until I obtained a satisfactory result.
You did it on purpose?
Of course. Then Ripley and I discussed it in some detail.
That better be a lie.
He reached across the water, grabbed a handful of her hair.
We were both fascinated and amused, and if it soothes your ego, I'll finish this walk down memory lane by telling you I had hot, disturbing, and imaginative dreams for a week afterward.
He tugged at her hair until their bodies bumped. Then he skimmed his hand over the wet white slope of her breast.
So did I.
He trailed a fingertip down her torso, back up again.
Mia?
Hmm.
I bet I can still make you giggle.
Before she could evade, he nipped her by the waist and turned her face down in the water. Taken by surprise, she flailed for a moment, then rolled when his fingers moved unerringly up her ribs.
Stop it!
Her hair was in her face, salt water in her eyes.
Giggle,
he insisted, tickling ruthlessly,
and squirm and wriggle.
You idiot!
She couldn't see or catch her breath. Despite her struggles, the helpless and foolish laughter escaped. It rolled out of her and over the waves as she slapped at him and tried to wriggle free. She managed to get a grip on his hair and yank while trying to shove her own out of her face, but he only rolled them over and over into the waves until she was dizzy, disoriented, and brutally aroused.
Damn octopus!
His hands were everywhere.
You've got a hell of a squirm, and it still works. Only this time...
He gripped her hips.
Why just dream?
And plunged into her. He went home with her, and they ate bowls of cold pasta like ravenous children. With hunger unabated, they fell into bed and fed off each other. Tangled with him, she slipped into sleep and into dreams of floating in a dark sea as peacefully as the moon sailed the night sky. She drifted on her own pleasure, the water cool, the air sweet. In the distance, the shadows and shapes of her island rose out of the sea. It slept, with only the beam from the cliff light guarding it from the dark. The music of the waves lulled her until she, too, slept, and the stars erupted into bolts of lightning, stabbing down at the shadows and shapes of her island. Around her, the sea began to thrash and heave, pulling her helplessly away from home.
She fought, striking out with hard, desperate strokes toward the fog that had begun to build a dirty wall at the shore. Waves swamped her, spun her into that breathless black, slapped her back, dragged her under. Roaring filled the night, and the screams that followed it ripped at her heart. With what strength she had left, she reached for the fire inside her, but she was too late to beat the dark. She watched the island fall into the sea. Even as she wept, it pulled her down with it. She woke, curled away from Sam, drawn into a tight ball and clinging to the edge of the bed. Trembling, she rose, walked to the window to soothe herself with the view of her garden, of the steady beam of the island light. Would it come to that? Would she do everything that could be done and have it still not be enough? Through the night she heard the long, triumphant howl of a wolf. Knowing that it wanted her to cower, she stepped out onto her little balcony.
"I am fire,"
she said it softly, "and what's in me will one day purge you."
"Mia."
She turned and saw Sam sitting up in bed.
"Yes, I'm here."
"What is it?"
"Nothing."
She came back in, but left the doors open to the night.
"Just restless."
"Come back to bed."
He held out a hand.
"Let me help you sleep."
"All right."
She slid in beside him, turned her body to his, invitation. But he only drew her close, stroked her hair.
"Close your eyes. Let your mind go. Let it go for one night."
"I'm not..."
"Let it go," he repeated.
And stroking her hair, he charmed her into a deep and dreamless sleep. 13.
"This,"
Mia said as the sun broke the sky in the east with an arrow of fire,
"is for us. The midsummer Sabbath, the celebration of the earth's coming bounty, the warmth of the air, and the full power of the sun. We are the three."
"Yeah, yeah,"
Ripley yawned hugely. "And if we can get on with this, I might be able to get home and catch another hour's sleep."
"Your reverence is, as always, inspiring.
You'll remember I voted against standing around up here at dawn. Since it's Sunday, both of you can go back to bed. I'm on duty all day."
"Ripley,"
Nell managed to make her voice mild and patient,
"it's the solstice. Celebrating the longest day should begin when the day begins."
"I'm here, aren't I?" Ripley scowled at Nell. "You're awfully bright and chipper for a pregnant woman. Why aren't you flat out with morning sickness?"
"I've never felt better in my life."
"Or looked happier," Mia said. "We'll celebrate fertility today, the earth's and yours. The first bale fire has burned since sunset. The dawn fire is for you to light."
She lifted a circlet she'd woven from lavender and set it on Nell's head.
"You're the first of us to carry life and to take what we are to the next generation. Blessed be, little sister."
She kissed Nell's cheeks, then stepped back. "Okay, that gets me misty." Ripley moved up, kissed Nell in turn, then linked her hand with Mia's. Nell lifted her arms and let the power ripple into her.
"From dawn until the day is done, this fire we make glows bright as the sun. As light grows strong across the sky, I call the flames from air to fly. Burn no flesh, no feather, nor tree. As I will, so mote it be."
Fire spewed up from the ground, bright as gold. Mia lifted another circlet from the white cloth on the ground, set it on Ripley's head. Though she rolled her eyes for form, Ripley lifted her arms. The power was warm and welcome. "In the earth we sow our seed, that she may grant us what we need. Across her breast the dawn brings light, all through this day to shortest night. We celebrate her fertility. As I will, so mote it be." Wildflowers sprang up through the earth to ring the circle. Before Mia could reach for the third circlet, Ripley picked it up and kissed her. "Just to make it official," she said, and settled the flowers on Mia's hair.
"Thanks."
She in turn lifted her arms. Power was like breath.
Today the sun holds its full power. Its strength and light grow hour by hour. Its bright fire warms the air and earth. Its cycle sustains us, birth to death to birth. I celebrate the fire in me. As I will, so mote it be.
From her fingertips beams shot to the sun, and from the sun to her, until the circle in the clearing shimmered with the birth of the day. She lowered her arms, joined hands with Nell, with Ripley.
He watches, she told them, and he waits.
Why don't we do something about it? Ripley demanded. The three of us are here, and like both of you keep hammering home, it's the solstice. That's a lot of punch.
It isn't the time to...
Mia broke off when Nell squeezed her hand.
Mia, a show of force, of solidarity and strength. Why not make a point? Our circle is whole.
A point, Mia thought. Perhaps the unbroken circle was the point, at least for the moment.
She could feel, through the link, Nell's determination, Ripley's passion. Well then, let's not be subtle.
She gathered herself and the pooled strength of her sisters.
We are the three and of the blood, Ripley began, moving like her sisters in a ring within the ring. From us, the force and light will flood.
With might that strikes the waiting dark,
Nell's voice rose to echo on the air.
An arrow of light toward what bears our mark.
Here we stand, so you can see.
With hands still joined, Mia lifted her arms.
And beware the wrath of the sisters three.
Light spewed up from the center of the circle like a funnel, whirling, roaring as it geysered up. Like the arrow Nell had called, it shot out of the circle, out of the clearing, and into the shadows of the summer trees, and from those shadows came a single, furious howl. Then there was only the quiet breeze and the musical call of crystals hanging from branches.
So he slinks away,
Mia remarked. That felt good. Ripley rolled her shoulders.
It did. It felt positive.
Letting out a long breath, Nell looked around the clearing.
It felt right.
Then it was right. Today he can't touch us or ours.
Whatever came after, Mia thought, they had made a stand. They had made their point. She lifted her face to the sun.
It's a beautiful day.
She intended to spend it in her garden, away from the crowds that would pack into the village and the traffic that would stream along the roads. She intended to spend it on simple things, the tasks that gave her pleasure. A day without worry, she thought, a clean and clear day with all shadows brushed away like dust with a broom. She gathered the herbs and flowers she'd selected for her midsummer harvest with a boleyn, the curved, white-handled knife she saved for that purpose alone. The scents and shapes and textures never failed to delight her. The variety of their uses never failed to satisfy. Some she would dry by hanging them in her kitchen, some in her tower room. She would make charms from some, potions from others, from soaps to creams to healing balms and divination aids, and some would simply be sprinkled into sauces and salads for flavor, or mixed into a potpourri to scent the air. Just before 12, she stopped to light the noon bale fire. She set it on her cliffs like a beacon, and stood for a time watching the sea and the pleasure boats that skimmed over it. Now and then, she saw the glint of binoculars, and knew she was watched as she watched. There, the summer people would say, up on the cliffs. She's supposed to be a witch. Such attention would once have caused her to be hunted and hanged. Now Mia thought the possibility of magic brought people to the island and into her store. So the wheel ran, she mused, a circle spinning. She went back to her garden. When her herbs were tied and hung, she used the sun to brew a small pot of chamomile tea. She had it iced with a hint of fresh mint, when Sam stepped onto her path.
"Traffic's a bitch," he said.
"Midsummer and Mabon draw the most tourists."
She poured the tea into a glass.
"Tourists who are interested in such things," she added. "Did you light your bale fire?"
"This morning, near your circle in my woods."
"Your woods," he corrected when she arched her eyebrows.
Absently, he reached down to pet Isis, who had come to rub against his legs. He noted the new collar and the charm hanging from it, a pentagram carved on one side, a sun wheel on the other.
New?
For the midsummer blessing.
She cut a slice of bread from a fresh loaf, drizzled it with honey, and offered it to him.
I made more than the fairies need.
He took a bite, but she noticed that his restless gaze roamed her garden. It was rich and ripe with summer, the tall spires dancing in the breeze, the mobs of color tumbling over the ground. He watched a hummingbird flash by, then drink from the long purple bells of foxglove. Roses, red as passion, climbed up the trellis to her old bedroom window, as he had once climbed, risking flesh and bone to reach her. The scent of summer roses could still make his heart ache. Now he sat with her in the sun and dappled shade of her garden, adults with more weighing on them than the girl and boy could ever have imagined. She wore a sleeveless dress, green as the lush leaves that surrounded them, and her face, beautiful and calm, told him nothing.
Where are we, Mia?
In my midsummer garden, having tea with bread and honey. It's a lovely day for it.
She lifted her cup. But judging from your mood, perhaps I should have served wine. He rose, paced away. He would, she knew, tell her what was on his mind soon enough, whether or not she wanted to hear it. Only a few nights before, he'd been light-hearted and playful enough to coax her into a swim. But today there was a cloud around him. He'd always been a moody creature.
My father called me this morning, he told her.
Ah.
Ah,
Sam repeated, and managed to make the syllable a bite.
He's displeased with my performance. That's a direct quote. I'm putting too much time and money into the hotel here.
It's your hotel.
I pointed that out. My hotel, my time, and my money.
Sam rammed his hands into his pockets.
I might have saved my breath. I'm told I'm making rash and dangerous financial and career decisions. He's pissed off that I've sold my place in New York, annoyed that I've budgeted so much for the rehab at the hotel, and irked that I sent a proxy rather than attending the June board meeting personally.
Because she felt for him, Mia rose and rubbed his stiff shoulders.
I'm sorry. It's difficult ramming up against parental disapproval. It doesn't matter how old we are, it stings when they don't understand us.
The Magic Inn is our first and oldest asset. He's figured out that I finessed it from him. Now it's like a bone he wants to drag back from me.
And you're just as determined to keep your teeth in it.
He shot a furious look over his shoulder. Damn right. He'd have sold it to strangers years ago if he hadn't been legally bound to keep it in the family. He sold it to me, happily enough, but now he's realized I intend to make something of it, so he's irritated. It's a thorn in his side. So am I.
Sam.
For a moment, she pressed her cheek against his back. And for a moment, she was 16 again and comforting her unhappy, moody love.
Sometimes you just have to take a step away and accept what is.
What is?
He agreed, turning to her.
He never could. Neither he nor my mother ever accepted what I am. It was something not to be discussed, as if I had some sort of embarrassing condition.
Furious, as much because of letting himself be sucked in again as by the facts themselves, he strode down the path, through an arbor where morning glory vines were busily tangling.
It's in his blood as much as mine.
He saw her start to speak, then stop herself.
What? Just say it.
All right, then. It's not the same for him. You respect what you have. You celebrate it. For him, it's a, well, a pesky inherited trait. He's not alone in that. And because of it, you have more, are more, than he can ever have or be.
He's ashamed of it, and me.
Yes.
Her heart wrung with pity.
I know. It hurts you. It always has. You can't change what he thinks or feels. You can only change what you feel.
Is that how you handle your family?
It took her a moment, and that was a jolt, to realize he meant her parents and not Lulu or Ripley and Nell.
I used to envy you on some level. Just the fact that your parents worked up the interest and energy to push at you, even if it meant pushing you in the wrong direction. We never argued here. She turned back to study the house she loved. They never noticed if I was angry. My rebellions were completely wasted on them. There came a point when I had to accept that their disinterest wasn't personal.
Oh, for Christ's sake!
She nearly laughed at his impatient explosion. It was healthier and more practical, and certainly more comfortable all around. What was the point of breaking my heart over it when they wouldn't have noticed? Or if they had, it would have baffled them. They're not bad people, just careless parents. I'm who I am because they were what they were. That's enough for me.
You always were sensible, he replied. I could never figure out whether I admired that or found it annoying. I still can't.
You always were moody. She sat on the bench by the arbor, and the same goes. Still, it's a shame the call put a blight on your holiday.
I'll get over it.
He slipped his hands into his pockets again, fingering the tumbling stones he'd forgotten he carried.
He expects me back in New York within the month to resume my proper place in the company.
Her world tilted. She gripped the edge of the bench to balance herself, then forced herself to her feet, forced shut that piece of her heart she'd allowed to be touched by his pain. I see. When will you leave?
What? I'm not going back. Mia, I told you I was here to stay. I meant it, no matter what you think.
With a careless shrug, she turned to start back to the house.
Damn it, Mia!
He grabbed her arm, pulled her back. Watch your step, she said it coldly.
Are you just waiting for me to pack up and go? He demanded. Is that where we are?
I'm not waiting for anything.
What do I have to do to get us past this?
You can start by letting go of my arm.
Letting go is just what you expect.
To prove her wrong, he took her other arm so they were facing each other in the dappled shade of the path.
So you won't let me touch you, not where it matters most. You'll take me to your bed, but you won't come to mine. You won't so much as sit and have a meal with me in a public place unless it's under the guise of business. You won't let me talk about the years without you, and you won't share magic with me when we make love, because you don't trust me to stay.
Why should I? Why should I do any of those things? I prefer my bed. I don't choose to date. I'm not interested in your life off-island, and to share magic during the physical act of love is a level of intimacy I'm not willing to explore with you. She shoved his hands aside and stepped back. I've given you cooperation in business, some friendly companionship, and sex. This is what suits me. If it doesn't suit you, find someone else to play with.
This isn't a goddamn game.
Her voice was sharp. Oh, isn't it? He stepped toward her, and she held up her hands. Light, spitting red, shot between them. Be careful. He merely held up his own hands, and a wash of searing blue water struck the light until there was nothing but the sizzle of vapor between them.
Was I ever?
No. And you always wanted too much.
Maybe I did. The problem was I didn't know what I wanted. You always did. It was always so fucking clear to you, Mia, what you needed, what you wanted. There were times when your vision choked me.
Stunned, she dropped her hands to her side. Choked you? How can you say that to me? I loved you.
Without questions, without doubts. It was as if you could see the rest of our lives in this pretty box. You had it all lined up for me just the way my parents did.
Her cheeks paled. That's a cruel thing to say, and you've said enough.
She hurried back down the path. It's not enough until I'm done. Running away from it doesn't change anything.
You're the one who ran. She whirled back, and the pain of it crashed through all the years and struck her with a fresh blow. It changed everything.
I couldn't be what you wanted. I couldn't give you what you were so sure was meant to be. You looked ahead 10 years, 20, and I couldn't see the next day.
So it's my fault you left?
I couldn't be here. For God's sake, Mia, we were hardly more than children, and you were talking marriage. Babies. You'd lie beside me when my head was so full of you I couldn't think and talk about how we'd buy a little cottage by the woods and...
He trailed off.
It seemed to strike both of them at once, the little yellow cottage by the woods, where she hadn't come since he'd moved in.
"Young girls in love," she said, and her voice trembled, "dream about marriage and babies and pretty cottages."
"You weren't dreaming." He walked to her table again, sat, and dragged his fingers through his hair. "It was destiny for you. When I was with you, I believed it. I could see it, too. And at that point, it smothered me."
"You never said it wasn't what you wanted."
"I didn't know how. And every time I tried, I'd look at you. All that confidence, that utter faith that this was the way it would be. Then I'd go home and I'd see my parents and what marriage meant. I'd think of yours and what family meant. It was hollow and airless. The idea of the two of us moving in that direction seemed insane. I couldn't talk to you about it. I didn't know how to talk to you about it."
"So instead, you left?"
"I left. When I started college, it was like being torn in two. The part that wanted to be there, the part that wanted to be here, be with you. I thought about you constantly."
He looked at her now. He would say to the woman what he'd never been able to say to the girl.
"When I'd come home on weekends or breaks, I'd be half sick until I'd see you waiting on the docks. That whole first year was like a blur."
"Then you stopped coming home every weekend," she remembered. "You made excuses for why you needed to stay on the mainland, to study, to go to a lecture."
"It was a test. I could go without seeing you for 2 weeks, then a month. Stop thinking about you for an hour, then a day. It got easier to convince myself that staying away from you and the island was the only way I was going to escape being trapped into that box. I didn't want to get married. I didn't want to start a family or be in love with one girl my entire life or root myself on a little island when I'd never really seen the world. I got a taste of the world in college, the people I met there, the things I learned. I wanted more."
"Well, you got more. And the lid's been off the box for a number of years. We're in different places now with different goals."
He met her eyes. "I came back for you."
"That was your mistake. You still want more, Sam, but this time I don't. If you'd told me this 11 years ago, I would have tried to understand. I would have tried to give you the time and the room you needed. Or I'd have tried to let you go without bitterness. I don't know if I would have succeeded, but I know I loved you enough that I would have tried. But you're not the center of my life any longer. You haven't been for some time."
"I'm not going away or giving up."
"Those are your decisions."
Ignoring the headache brewing, she gathered up the tea things.
"I enjoy having you for a lover,